spreading their message to millions. Kiss Talk, talking Kiss, Kiss fans and Kiss podcast, with your host, Mike from Nashville, Tom Watts, and special guest, it could be you. Now, here they are, your Kiss Talk crew.
We are just getting started!
Welcome to another episode of Kiss Talk. We are back, and I've got Tuck Watts with me. Tuck, how are you?
Hey, man, I am doing great. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. This is Mike Williams. And to start this episode off, I simply want to say this. How great is it when you debut your new Kiss podcast called Kiss Talk in what is the probably the most hyped week of Kiss activity happening, and that was during the week of the Kiss cruise back in the first week of November. I had the opportunity to do that, and then I literally went off the planet. And Tuck's sitting out there going, what happened? So just to kind of throw that out there for those of you that listen to the first podcast and have continued to visit us on the Facebook page, I totally appreciate that. Kiss Cruise was amazing. I came back, had the infamous Kiss crud, Kiss Cruise crud, which basically was the type A flu. Had a lot of traveling to do for work, and it became just a total disaster for me to try to get anything moving again. So here it is. It's 2019. I'm very happy to say we are on track. We are the newest Kiss podcast. We are the Kiss podcast that is about Kiss fans, and about other Kiss podcasts. Because in my traveling that I do, I listen to a ton of Kiss podcasts, and so often I want to talk. I want to join their conversation when I'm listening to that podcast, and that's the one of the biggest reasons for the creation of this podcast is to give me an outlet to do that. Tuck Watts has been very kind and to say he would join me in this because both of us are gigantic Kiss fans, and neither one of us really have an outlet to talk about Kiss other than to each other. So this is where we're going to do that, and we hope that you're entertained and informed in that process. But in addition to that, we want to make this your Kiss podcast because I know there are other people out there like myself that would love to be part of a podcast, don't know how, don't want to start their own or whatever. So if you have a topic and you would like to join us, you can email us at kisstalkpodcast@gmail.com and we will arrange to get you onto the podcast and talk about your topic because that's what we want to talk about is what the fans want to talk about. So given that reintroduction and explanation, Tuck and I are here. We're ready for Kiss Talk, I guess episode 2, if we want to call it that. I'm not really getting into too much of numbering episodes. But anyway, I'm ready to get started because we got a lot to catch up on and a lot to talk about. Tuck and I really haven't even talked since the Kiss Cruise about Kiss for the simple reason that I wanted us to be able to talk about these things with a fresh perspective, having not talked to Tuck about them, and he hasn't heard from me. So, Tuck, you want to talk about some Kiss stuff? Because there's a lot to talk about.
There is a ton of stuff to talk about in regard to the Kiss. And just the greater, you know, the Kiss umbrella, if you will, the sort of things going on sort of on the periphery with former members. And I mean, there's just a ton of stuff.
There is.
It's crazy. It's, you know, when I think back to being a Kiss fan, you know, I remember, you know, being a little kid and or preteen or whatever it was, collecting the Kiss cards, you know, and there's Gene, Paul, Peter, and Ace. You know, I never dreamed that there would be so much going on under the Kiss umbrella, if you will.
You know, especially we're approaching 50 years of Kiss here over the next few years. And it's such a great time to be a Kiss fan. You know, we knew it was going to wind down at some point. We're fortunate that it's going to be a slow wind down. It's not like an overnight, well, we're done. Someone's passed away. It's all over. You know, we're very fortunate to have all the Kiss members, the original Kiss members, certainly still alive. Many of the replacement members still alive. So again, it's a celebration. It is the best time, I think, ever to be a KISS fan. So let's celebrate. What do you say?
Yeah. You know what? I've got an idea. Let's rock and roll all night and party every day.
Okay, we can do that. And it's funny, that's going to come up later a little bit. So let's just kind of back up. I don't want to back up too far into the year. I got a couple things to comment about the year in 2018 as we get into this. But first, let's back up to the KISS Cruise, because that was our first episode. There was a lot going on in the KISS Cruise. I've been on all the KISS Cruises. I think it was the best KISS Cruise that there had ever been. And I'm not sure how you top it from here. I really don't know what you do. But, Tuck, from your perspective, the highlights of the KISS Cruise had to be Bruce and Ace. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think, going in, of course, I didn't go on the cruise, okay? So, but I think going in, I think what I could gauge that people were excited about, and I think the first thing people were excited about was Vinny at the pre-cruise party, right?
Gathering, yeah.
I felt like people were really excited about that. Ace being a part of this cruise, I think that was the first time he's ever been a part of this event. And then Bruce, who always seems to bring it at one of these things. Bruce is so accessible to the fans. He seems to be almost like more of a fan than an ex-member in a lot of ways. It kind of gets the whole, the fans don't want to hear, Lick It Up for the 9 millionth time. They want to hear King of the Mountain or whatever. And so I think, Ace, Bruce, especially on the heels of what happened last year with Bruce and Bob and all that stuff.
Right.
Where they just knocked it out of the park. But I think those are the three things I think going in that people were really excited about.
All right. So let's talk for a second about Bruce then, because we're kind of leaning on that. I agree that Bruce kind of comes at this as a fan, but I also think he's humble enough to come at this and go, I had some good stuff and I'm going to put it out there because I think that's what they want to hear. And he's proud of what he did. I mean, he's proud to the point of, and here's a hot topic for Tuck and I, he's proud to the point that he played Let's Put the X in Sex. So Tuck and I already had a discussion confrontation on Facebook about Let's Put the X in Sex several weeks ago, and I think that's great. But I love the fact that Bruce says, look, it was a video, it was a song, we released it, it was part of it. He puts it into the medley with Rise to It and You Make Me Rock Hard. I like the pride in what he did there. So just kind of looking at the Bruce set list, one of the set lists opens with King of the Mountain, one of my favorites. Tuck, you open a set with King of the Mountain. Where do you go from there, man? That's incredible.
And one of those songs that we ended up on a KISS record, Tears Are Falling, right? That,
You're talking about
Asylum. What am I thinking here? Why was that never an opener before, it was written to be an opener.
Incredible.
You imagine the lights go down, You won the best, you got the best KISS, and then the drums. That would just been awesome. But right. That's a great opener.
Yeah. So some other songs on there, everybody kind of already knows all this stuff, but we're going to just cover some brief things. You had Unholy, you had the medley of Hell or High Water, I'll Fight Hell to Hold You, one of my favorite songs. I'll Fight Hell to Hold You. Unbelievable. Todd Kearns hitting those notes, man. When Your Walls Come Down, No, 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 Great to Hear Live. Then he pulls
Which just played No, 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 right?
Yeah, they did briefly. Yep.
The Craziness Tour, right?
Yep. And then Sword and Stone. I was absolutely thrilled. And, I was in a position on that particular song where I was just watching the crowd. And it actually took a minute. But once everybody got through looking at the person they were with and going, I can't believe they're playing that, and then the crowd just finally went crazy over the fact that an unreleased KISS song that was covered by Bonfire and
Paul Dean
of Loverboy gets played. I mean, I just have to wonder, and I'm sure that Paul saw the set list prior to they're playing it, but how can Paul Stanley not sit up there in the Crystal Palace of the cruise ship and not be listening to this, going, wow, there's that song. It sounds great live, you know?
That we've never put on a record, and it's getting this response.
Yeah. If I'm Paul and Gene, I don't know how I don't sit up there and listen to Bruce's set and Ace's set and not go, yeah, we probably should have played that. Those turned out pretty good. So other stuff was Who Wants to Be Lonely, Thou Shalt Not, kind of surprised me a little bit on that one. A great version of I Still Love You. And then there's the Rise to It, Rock Hard, That's With the XXX medley. A tribute to Mr. Carr with Little Caesar. I thought that was, you know, well done and a nice toss out there. Heart of Chrome, another one of my favorites. Love the fact he played that. And then he went over to Carnival Souls with Jungle and then did An All Night and God Gave Rock and Roll to You was another one on the list, which is one of those songs that's I actually expect them to pull that out on this tour, but it's kind of one of those I'm a little bit tired of. But much like Rock and Roll All Night, every time the band plays Rock and Roll All Night, and I could tell you I'd never want to hear it again, I'm just as excited about seeing it live as anybody else. So I jump in with the rest of the mass crowd and get excited about it. So anyway, but some of the other ones he played, of course, like Tuck said, Tears Are Falling. He did Take It Off. I thought that was great. A version of Forever. Back to Carnival Souls with Hate, Master and Slave, Rain in the Mirror. And then Turn on the Night was the other one he threw in one of the other sets. So fantastic work, man. I don't know that we'll ever see that again like that. I don't know, like I say, how they're going to top Kiss Cruise 9 after you have somebody that pulls out all these stops. But just amazing stuff. Any comments on that, Tuck, before we move over to Ace?
Again, Bruce just gets it, you know, and like you said, he is super proud of his stuff, you know, the material that he was able to work on. And in all honesty, the reunion sort of, you know, overshadows, I guess, the contributions that, you know, were made to the band in the 80s, but there were some great songs there.
Yeah.
And that's only highlighted, I think. Now, let's also be honest. We're not so much fanboys that we don't realize there's some crap in there, too.
Yeah.
Right?
There's some songs that I certainly could have done without, but...
Not on the set list, but we're talking about an 80s Kiss general.
Well, I mean, even on that set list a little bit, but sure, there's not one Kiss fan that will tell you, well, there's the perfect Kiss album that I love every song on. I may like them all, but I may not love them all. So right. I think that's going to happen.
But Bruce flies that flag for 80s Kiss.
He does.
And he does really good. And look, Sword and Stone was never on a record. Right. I mean, that's a dadgum good song, and it never made a record. So that tells you there's a lot of quality to 80s Kiss that maybe some people that just focus on the makeup don't realize.
Yep. Agreed. So we look over at Ace real quick, and, Ace kind of flips after hiring the Gene Simmons band to be the Ace Frehley band. Tremendous move on his part. I think it was a good move. I think what's interesting about the changeover on this is that he abandoned all of his solo stuff, and it became all about I say all of his solo stuff except for the latest album. And it became all about Kiss contributions for the most part. And which I loved. I love that idea that he did that on the Kiss Cruise, and he seemingly has done that in the shows since then with this new band. Now, of course, now he's getting the backlash of, well, now... You know, what about Rock Soldiers? What about Insane? What about all these great songs from your solo career? You know, you just can't make everybody happy, right? But I think some of the highlights of what he played on the cruise were, I was thrilled with Two Sides of the Coin. I was thrilled with Torpedo Girl. You know, when did I ever think I would hear that live? Never. And then, of course, everybody's screamed and hollered for him to play Darklight for years, and he does. And I... I love every minute of it. And they can say what they want to about, oh, it was sloppy, it was this. Get off the, I mean, get off that stuff, man. It's a celebration. It's time to celebrate this stuff. If you're not interested in it and you don't like it the way it's being done, just go away. You know, that whole, I think every podcast out there said, look, number one, if you don't like what we're doing, why do you listen to the podcast? If you don't like what Kiss does and the fact that Tommy and Eric's in the band and what they're doing, then why are you even here? So I think that follows through with any of this stuff. Other songs, you got Snowblind, Save Your Love. He did Torpedo Girl both nights. And the fact
2000
that
Man.
Yeah, which isn't terribly uncommon, but I think it was great. And then for me, it was opening that night, I believe it was the second night, with Rocket Ride. Because he opened the first show with Save Your Love. But I love Rocket Ride. I love hearing Ace Frehley do that live. I think that is just, that was a huge moment for me.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Ace has never been technically proficient. Let's be honest. All right. I mean, we're not talking Steve Vai here.
Right.
We're talking Ace Frehley. And also, how much time to prepare did he have with, the Rock and Roll Residency guys, you know?
Well, and I think there's been some criticism of that at Ace's effort to rehearse, because I know that my understanding is his band got there early and actually did some pre-rehearsal, and then Ace came in more as a single-day rehearsal kind of thing. And I have heard that Ace thought he would be able to get on the internet on the ship and get on YouTube and learn some of his leads and things like that, and that the internet was not available for Ace to be able to do that was something that he stated on the boat or after an interview or something to that respect. But I don't care. Look, it was phenomenal to me. This cruise was phenomenal. We'll talk about the Kiss aspect of that here in a second. But I don't care. It worked. Bruce's band, phenomenal, technical, amazing. Ace, you know, Ace's band, I do agree with most people that say Ace's band led Ace and helped him get through some of those songs. I've seen that before, so that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, can we be honest about this a minute, though?
Sure.
I mean, the real reason Todd Howarth and John Regan were in Ace's band in the 80s?
Well,
really? I mean, wasn't that the reason those guys were there?
Well, you know, there's rumors that a lot of those albums are not much Ace and a lot of Ace band. So that's certainly history that's, I think, is pretty well documented anyway.
And I think Ace has all, you know, I've said this, I think I've said this on Classic Rock Drops. Ace was always better when he had somebody else man in the store. You hear some of Ace's demo stuff and it's horrible. No offense to him, but then Gene or Paul or somebody would come in and help him and it would become a great song. And I think that's what Todd and John and even Richie could do, is take what Ace contributes and turn it into what it became. I think he's always been better when he had that other figure that was really strong in the band that could refine his ideas.
Yep. I agree with you. I don't know, you know, I don't know how that worked during the 1978 solo album. Who was that lead for him on those sessions? Maybe it was the producer. I don't know. But you're right. It seems to be the case. The last thing I want to talk about on the set list for him is the add-in of you had Bronx Boy added in and Rockin' with the Boys. I think both of those are great live songs. I don't know that I even have a favorite, really, one way or the other, after hearing them live. But I do love the Spaceman album, and I do agree that those songs should have been added into that, no doubt, because that album was brand new at that point.
Yeah.
So, exciting stuff. as we stay on the topic of the Kiss cruise, well, let's jump over to actually the band Kiss, you know, to their cruise. So Paul and Gene, very, very busy on the ship, doing all their extracurricular activities. They roll in, they do the Kiss set list on the first indoor show, and then, of course, the second indoor show. And everybody is kind of stunned to a certain degree when what we get is a what appears to be the potential set list for the End of the Road tour. Some backtracking was introduced into this show, and a lot of people say, you know, what does it matter? Does it matter? Or whatever. I'll be quite honest with you. I was wrapped up in the moment. I was five rows back. I didn't care. I was looking at the new costumes for the first time. The band looked great. Yeah, they sounded great if they had backtracks helping them out with that. That's great. I didn't pick up on it at the time. It just was not something that I was tuned into or paying attention to or looking for, quite honestly, when I'm standing there watching them. So I guess it doesn't matter to me. I mean, because I guess that was a test for me. Did something blow up? Did it mess up? Is there something that I just thought was awful about it? No. Even though the set list was a less exciting set list, I enjoyed all of it. Of course, I had an element of disappointment because I've been there every cruise, and there's been that track that they started doing about, I don't know, Kiss Cruise 5, 4 or 5, where you thought, okay, now they're getting it. They're starting to play some rare stuff. And then we get this on this one. I still think they should have played a rare track because they set the precedence at that point. That's what Kiss's gift to us was going to be on the Kiss Cruise, is they were going to play or they were going to play something, right?
Well, okay, well, let me just ask, what song, or give me a group of songs that you think would have had the same impact as, say, you know, when they played I?
Well,
is there anything, have they exhausted that?
I don't think they have. I mean, for me, they could have played Tomorrow. I think for the masses, they could have played Mr. Speed, which everybody seems to just die over that song. I'm not a gigantic fan of Mr. Speed. That's probably crushing people across the world. But, give me an Unmasked song. You know, they did Is That You before. Tomorrow has always been one of those songs I've wanted to hear live. I don't know. Gene has practiced Charisma. Why not play Charisma?
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. There's something. There's just no reason why you can't learn one song that you don't normally play or you're never going to play again. There's just too many bands that do that. And look,
Kiss has got a bunch of songs. And my point was, I think they've sort of touched on a lot of the songs that could they still do it? Yeah, of course, they've got so many songs to play that there's songs they've never played that if they played them, I think a lot of people would be like, wow, they played that song.
Yeah.
But I don't know if people would be like, wow, they played that song. I don't know that there's that song still in the catalog that.
I still think there is. I think, if they did Tomorrow, what if they did It's My Life? I mean, they could have done that. Gene played that one out on the road. I don't know. I still think there is. For the cruise people, I think there is.
But I'm just saying, and you know, I think there's different levels. And I think they could play some stuff that would be cool, but I don't know if there's a lot of songs. And there's how many songs have they got? 250 or something?
I'm not asking them to play Dance All Over Your Face or any of that, or, you know.
there may be, and I'm just not thinking about it at the moment. But I'm just, like when I saw the video when they played I that night, you know,
yeah,
I mean, that was goosebumps.
Oh yeah.
It was like, holy crap. Cause we never thought we'd see that.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
I don't know that there's another song that I just don't think I'll ever hear that I care that much about, but yeah. Okay. I get you. I'm just playing the advocate here. So go ahead. Right.
No problem. That's why we're talking about it. So
it's called Kiss Talk, by the way. If you haven't picked up on that, we're just going to talk about Kiss the whole time.
The whole time. That's it. So as I look at the set list, all right, so, you know, they brought Say Yeah back into the set list, which is fine. I think it's a great live song.
I love that song.
I do too. And underappreciated from day one. But yet, what I hear amongst the fans is, oh, they brought back Heaven's on Fire. That was kind of a rare track. Who thinks Heaven's on Fire was a rare track? Just because they haven't played it in a while. Is that a rare track?
Yeah, it's not a rare track.
I don't get it. I heard those comments and I just really kind of said, what? And then, so they stick in Hell or Hallelujah, Hotter Than Hell, which a lot of people like. Hotter Than Hell is kind of one of those songs they're just sick of, that and Firehouse. I'm not. I like those songs. I don't get tired of them. I do get tired of Hell or Hallelujah. It and Modern Day Delilah, for me, are two of the worst songs on those two albums. I never liked those releases, and I thought there was at least three songs on those albums that were better than those songs that they should have played. Say Yeah being one of them off the other album.
You know what? For me, I would throw Psycho Circus in as well. I love the song.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I heard it, but I think Paul likes that song a whole lot more than I do.
Well, and it was a great opening song, and it has an era. I mean, that Psycho Circus era of the 2000s, I think it was well played. But I'm kind of like you. I mean, yeah, it's a great song. It's a great live song. I do like it. I just don't know if I still like it, like hearing Lick It Up Again, which is in the set list as well. And, of course, their encores were Detroit Rock City, Hide Your Heart, and Rock and Roll All Night. So, you know, at this point in the show, you kept thinking, well, maybe they're going to do something in the middle encore, something unusual, and there's something unusual was Hide Your Heart, which has not become unusual over the last several years. They played it several times. So, anyway, if this is a picture of the end of the road, then for the mass fans, it's a great set list. And it goes back to my discussion with you, Tuck, about a future episode of the two different Kisses, so to speak, about putting in hits that are real hits versus, you know, hits that are only hits when they play live. So anyway, we'll get into that in another time. But on the overall, I think the Kiss Cruise was fantastic, even with Kiss doing this set list. I mean, if the only negative about the Kiss Cruise for me was the fact they didn't play Tomorrow or Mr. Speed or whatever, that's a pretty, you know, that's still a great cruise. And granted, Bruce and Ace made this cruise. I give them every bit of credit. It wasn't Kiss that made this cruise. So, but in any case, I still.
And they didn't even, on the acoustic set, they didn't even pull out really anything there.
Well, okay. That was my last point of the Kiss cruise conversation is the fact that we got all members of Kiss. We got Ace and Bruce up there on the stage, and they actually recreated the Unplugged era, so to speak. So I'm glad that they did it so that they could do it and get it out of the way, because I'm sure that whether it was Paul or Tommy or whoever, if they hadn't done it, it would be kind of like the prior year where it's like, oh, I can't believe you didn't have Bruce come up and play a song at all. And that's what they did. They didn't have Bruce play with them at all. And they had this opportunity on this ship to actually have Ace and Bruce on stage. They did it. They pulled it off. It was beautiful. I'm glad I was there. Again, one of the highlights. And it's part of the whole Bruce and Ace made this cruise. And that was part of it. So, my thought.
Yeah. I mean, and the Kiss camp is so full of drama. Or the fan base is so full of drama, I guess, that had they not shown up at some point. You know, oh, you know, they're fighting or they don't like each other, right, or, you know, Gene doesn't like Ace or whatever the crap. Where it's Tommy and Ace,
or it would have been like, oh, they're saving that for the end of the road tour because they're going to have all the members play the shows. Which, guys, that's not happening.
Yeah,
it's already well documented. Tommy and Eric are on the road with Kiss for every date through 2019, which are all the dates we know about to this point, and we'll see.
Now, would it entirely be out of the question as we're nearing that third year? We're in the third year, say. Kiss is near New Jersey, that Peter flies out or comes out and plays. You know, no, that's not out of the question at all.
I don't know that it's not out of the question that it happens, like when they play Madison Square Garden, that they don't do that. I don't know if you do any of that in the calendar year 2019. With them wanting this thing, or claiming that this tour is going to go 3 years. So obviously, we've seen this before with the Kiss Farewell Tour, Lost Cities Tour, blah, blah, blah. This is kind of a repeat. So they go out, they're doing all the major markets. They're not really even hitting all the major markets, quite honestly. They're skimming the earth is what they're doing in 2019. But they're
right. If you were an alien force invading the earth,
yeah,
you would just go to these cities.
Yeah. So you look at this and you go, okay, we've skimmed the earth first year. And they're claiming once they play this city, your city, they're not coming back. They have tried to make that as clear as possible.
But that's not entirely truthful.
I don't think it is either, because they can't not come back to Madison Square Garden. They can't not come back to L.A., okay? So let's continue that thought and say, okay, if we look at the model that they set in the early 2000s, or the Farewell Tour, then next year is the Lost Cities Tour 2, right? I mean, you have all these secondary markets, be it Knoxville for us, Chattanooga, you know, whatever your
state, in Ohio, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. All these secondary size cities that are 10,000 seat arenas that they're skipping this time. They've got to come back and they've got to hit those. They have already said they're going to play places they've never played, which they are. That escapes me right this minute, but. They're hitting some parts of the world this year that they've never even played in. So they could do this all over again next year and not hit a same city that they've already hit. Because, I mean, they still got South America. They still got tons of Europe to cover, Japan. I don't think any of that's on this tour, on this year yet. I may be mistaken, but just off the top of my head. So they definitely have another full year to go out on the road and hit dates. Then you get into year three, and I think that's exactly what you're talking about, Tuck. I think that's when you go back and you hit a few particularly special areas, and nobody said it's going to last the full 3 years, right?
Right.
I think they do go back and they hit some of these, and that's when we see some of those special things kind of happen. Because at that point, you've kind of run the course of the world. The end of the road idea has died down a little bit. So in year three, you do marketing campaign 2.0 and say, all right, these are our final dates of the end of the road. It's finally over. And whether that's a stadium thing, whether it's a Central Park thing, whether it's six dates across the states, I think you do tie in some of these special guest. I don't know. I've thought of a jillion ways they could do this. And quite honestly, in my discussions with other Kiss fans, I have simply said, I don't think Kiss knows how this ends yet.
Yeah.
I don't think there is a 3-year plan. I think there is a plan for this year, a partial plan for next year, and then they don't know. I just don't think they know.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway. I can see at some point Ace on stage playing with, you know, the guys. I could see Peter at not
Beth.
Every show, but at a show near, you know, where these guys are living. I could see Vinny get up and pretend to play a guitar for a couple of minutes.
Well, you know, I don't know if Vinny's a part of this or not. That's a great question.
That was set up for the joke
of
pretending to play the guitar.
And that's certainly on the list of topics here. But so I could see Peter. I mean, if there are 6 or 8 dates that are spread out, you know, literally like 2 or 3 weeks apart, where Peter can go home and rest, come back, he sings Beth, and he goes back home. I mean, I could see that string of dates where maybe there's 6 or 8 of those. I don't know. I could see that, but that doesn't mean Paul and Gene see that. So, other kind of topics, as we've kind of jumped from the cruise to End of the World tour. We're kind of out of order, but that's okay. Let's just stick with the flow here. What they're doing kind of for End of the Road. I mean, obviously, we've had 2 legs of the tour announced. We've blanketed 2019. We know what they're doing. They've introduced some of these ideas. Of course, they announced the tour on America's Got Talent in a very un-Kiss-like fashion. I think, and it's been discussed, I think basically they got an opportunity to be on the show. The idea of rolling out the tour never was planned until the Kiss cruise. I think that's when it was all planned. But, you know, they get this opportunity to be in front of 23 million people or whatever it is on America's Got Talent, and they take that opportunity. Is it right, Tuck? Is it right or wrong for them to do that and have a lackluster announcement where they don't even announce it?
I mean, look, we're so inundated with information now that I don't know that it really matters. There's so much stuff. Would it have been better to have like some huge coordinated announcement where, like on the Intrepid, the thing they did there with the reunion? Right. Yeah, maybe, but I don't know. You know, I don't know that has in today's media market where everybody's digesting. How many Kiss fans actually saw the America's Got Talent thing? How many people get their information, you know, a couple hours later online? How many people do you know that just get their news from Facebook and all they do is read the freaking headline?
Well, here's what I think is, I think the 23 million people that watched America's Got Talent probably would not have known if Kiss did a press conference on the Intrepid or at Trump's desk at the White House.
Right.
Because they don't pay attention to that. They don't care.
They're not interested.
They're not a Kiss fan. So.
Well, and how many people are fans of bands just in general? Even Kiss fans that would call themselves fans of Kiss. Oh, Kiss is playing next month? Oh, yeah, I'll go see them. Or, you know, or. Like we were saying, REO Speedwagon's in town. Let's go see REO Speedwagon. I mean, you know, that are fans, but they're not us fans. You know, they're not reading the tour dates. They don't know until they hear the commercial on the radio and it's a month away.
You had to work REO into the podcast, didn't you? Little pre-show joke there. Anyway, but you're right. And I mean, it's still every day that, whether you're listening to Eddie Trunk or whether you're listening or you see a post on a Kiss Facebook page, well, I didn't know these guys were even on tour.
Yeah.
I've been a Kiss fan since I was little. Oh, you're not a Kiss fan since you were little if you just found out that they're playing your city. I mean, that's, well, to me, I don't get that.
To be a Kiss fan.
Yeah.
And not know that. You got to define Kiss fan. To us, Kiss fan is us, right?
Right.
You got the cards, you got, you know, all the records, you got, you know, all the stuff. But to some people, it's like, hey, Kiss, hell yeah, you know. But they're also, those are the same people that are like, Ted Nugent, hell yeah, they're in town. Or, you know, or REO Speedwagon or Shinedown or whoever. You know, they're just fans of music and they like Kiss.
Yeah. So some of the other promotional things that have kind of happened, you know, Kiss went out and did a couple of late night shows. One particularly, I mean, that's kind of floating around on the videos is Kiss on the Late Late Show with James Corden, where, you know, James Corden actually is on the stage with Kiss and changes the lyrics to Rock and Roll All Night to be more comical. I am really surprised that they allowed that to happen. If you haven't seen that, it's out there on YouTube. You can see it. James Corden's dressed up like a bogus Kiss member. and changes the lyric content as if he is an old guy trying to rock and roll all night and party every day, but he talks about going to bed at 8 o'clock and that kind of stuff. But I was surprised.
But see, that's a rehash of the Paul Rudd joke in the Role Models movie.
Right.
Right, where he says, I can rock and roll all night and part of every day.
Right. But I was just surprised to see, I mean, that Paul and Gene allowed that to happen. Was being on James Corden worth allowing that to happen? I mean, it took their song that they claimed to be the anthem of rock and roll, and it got twisted into a parody of a joke, kind of. I don't know. I was surprised to see that happen. Anyway, and just as far as more hype, I mean, of course, you know, they've done a fair amount of publicity type stuff for this, but not a ton. I don't feel like that Kiss engine has been totally revved up to promote this tour. But on the easy front of things, you know, Keith LaRue just posted a couple of days ago. He had issued out on Facebook a description of when the band and everybody flew out. I think they did it in Las Vegas to do a test run of the show, test run of the stage. And that was everybody getting to see it for the first time function. And Keith said,
yeah, I posted that on the Kiss Talk when I saw it on the page. And I mean, just reading his words gave me goosebumps.
I thought so too. And you and I both know Keith to a certain extent. And
I didn't get a Christmas card from him this year, though.
He's a pretty down-to-earth, honest guy about this stuff. And he does work for Kiss, but I also don't think Keith would throw that type of description of what he saw out there if he really didn't want us to grasp it. Because he knew the people that were reading it were us, right?
He's a fan happens to work with Kiss, right?
Yeah, he's got the greatest job in the world, and he claims that, and I agree with that.
That wasn't PR. Right. That wasn't. And let's be honest, Kiss fans are a little jaded to the PR machine.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, everything, how many times have you heard, oh, that's a big word, like gymnasium? I mean, everything seems real scripted with Kiss.
Yeah.
So, but that was I think that was a from the heart moment from Keith. This is what I saw, and oh my God.
So, you got that, and he a couple of days ago on Instagram, there was a picture posted from backstage, and he talks about, you know, January 31st in Vancouver, you get to see, you know, around the corner at what's really happening. And the picture really didn't give you much to go on, other than it feels like it's massive. I guess when I really, you know, pulled the picture up, blew it up, and kind of said, what am I looking at here? I kind of felt like, because of what I had been told, this picture feels massive to me, like this is a massive stage. My understanding is, when they did set up the stage for the test, that they couldn't fit all of it into that particular arena. So they obviously have, you know, you have to, if you know anything about this stuff, I mean, you have to size these things to certain arenas. You can only play certain arenas because if your minimum set doesn't fit the arena, you can't play there. So you have all those kind of things going on.
And they sort of build it, I think, in pieces where, all right, when we're going to use the whole stage,
right?
You know, here's the whole stage. But, you know, when we're in, you know, a smaller city, that, you know, this is what we're going to use, you know.
Well, and I think that plays to something we said earlier. So when you go when you go back out next year to the Lost Cities tour for these venues that are 10,000 seat arenas and less, like Dayton and Chattanooga's arena holds more than that, but when you go to these arenas that will only fit a smaller stage, you got to realize you're going to see a scaled down version. So I'm going to encourage you to go this year and see the biggest, most massive set that they have in the biggest arenas. So I've gone to shows where I've seen
them in Atlanta. Go see them in Atlanta. Don't just wait until they come to Columbus.
Absolutely, because you're going to miss out on a piece of the show to a certain extent. So anyway, that's just some advice from somebody that's basically gone around the South and seen them in different size arenas, indoors and outdoors. Indoor shows are so much better than outdoor shows, especially with bands like Kiss, because they do have a visual show. And when you can darken a room like you can in an interior arena, the spectacle is so much better. I have people that comment, oh, I love the outdoor shed shows. Well, that's great. I mean, but it loses the Kiss effect when you see those shows.
That's fine if you're seeing REO Speedwagon.
All right.
You know,
because
there's not a show, right? I mean, it's and let's also, you know, talk about set lists. This sort of goes full circle. You know, when people talk about changing up set lists, yeah, Bruce Springsteen can play whatever song he wants to, because it's not timed with lighting and explosions and all that stuff. Kiss has a lot more going into things.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, right. So it's a little more, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying it's, but it's a little more difficult to, hey, we're going to drop Love Gun tonight and throw in I Stole Your Love.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Wait a minute. What happens with the pyro? What happens with all the lights? What happens with, you know, there's a lot of moving parts in a Kiss show that maybe weren't in some other artists' shows.
Exactly. So I guess the last promotional thing for that they've done for End of the Road is the Kiss World vinyl. You know, this was released as a CD previously, and they're re-releasing it. Somebody said that it wasn't released here in America. I don't know why I feel like it was. I went and bought it at Best Buy the day it came out, so I'm confused on the fact that it wasn't released in America.
Yeah, I'm not entirely.
That's a fact I challenge a little bit. Anyway, so it's now coming out on regular black vinyl through regular distribution, and it's coming out on colored vinyl through Sound Vinyl, or you know, you can check that on their Facebook page. But it's still. Last time I checked, they were making, was it 1,000 or 1,500 copies? In any case, there were about 350 available copies to purchase left. So, this is
the Best of Kiss. This is any number of the compilations that have been put out over the years, and who knows exactly how much of a hand Kiss as a band actually has in the release of things like this, but
right,
I mean, obviously it's an official release.
Yeah, it is official release. I you know, it's a great compilation in my opinion. When you look at what's on that compilation, I love it because they actually threw in some you know, songs from Killers, and it's a great span.
Yeah, it's got Shandy on and I'm a Legend tonight. Yeah,
I can't imagine that somebody listening to this show does not have enough Kiss or Kiss compilations. But if you're wanting to buy someone a compilation to get them into Kiss, I guess you could buy them this. Or if you're like me and you force Kiss on your family and friends, then you buy a copy of Kiss World and hand it to them and go, here you go, man. So
it's got all the eras, right? Yeah. I'm looking over the
pretty
set good. List now.
Pretty close, yeah.
So. I mean, it's got some new stuff on it. It's got Modern Day Delilah, Hell or Hallelujah. It's got from the 80s. It's got Tears Are Falling, Heaven's on Fire, Lick It Up, the Crazy, Crazy Nights, the stuff you'd expect.
Yeah.
About the only thing missing, I don't see.
Yeah, World Without
I don't
Heroes.
See any, Hot in the Shade. Is there? Yeah, I don't believe.
See, I mean, you should have Forever.
The set, the one I'm looking at here.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I mean, how do you leave off Forever? Yeah.
What's that?
Is Forever not on there? I'm not looking at it.
I'm not seeing it on here. So,
how do you leave it?
Rock and Roll to you. So, but then there's the whole era. You know, there's stuff from the first three records. Thinking and so, songs from the second three, and then there's, you know, stuff from Dynasty. So yeah, I mean, everything's sort of covered there.
Okay. Well, anyway, so I think that's what we've got as far as hype and promotion. Now, let's look at what they're talking about doing during the tour. So we've got the so-called meet and greets that they've received some criticism over because of the pricing, because, you know, the meet and greets have been have basically gone up in price. They don't include the ticket. They don't include autographs. So they've certainly got some flack over that. They have a meet and greet that cost as much as $7,500, which gets you in the pit, which is basically the photo area, I guess, between the barrier and the stage. And then on top of that, they have individual meet and greets with guitars and basses and snare drums and swords. It was probably the newest thing. Gene is now selling one sword per show. In case you're not familiar with that, I can't imagine you're listening to this podcast. Gene uses a sword during his fire-breathing act and then throws the sword into a box, and it's sitting there flaming. He's going to sell that sword at every show. It's a very unique-looking sword. It's great. It's very well-crafted, I'm sure. But the price tag on it is $12,500. And it does have a little asterisk by it that says the price will vary based on location. So I don't know if that means if he does it in Dayton, Ohio, is $8,500. But if he does it in New York City, it's $12,500. You know, I don't. What does that mean? But
and how is that established?
Yeah, I mean, does he like check the household medium income and have a? I don't know. Anyway, I would think that's something that's sold pre-show anyway, and you would pretty much know if it's sold or not. I don't know. And maybe if it's not sold by Showtime, maybe it's discounted $1,000 or something. I don't know. Anyway, I think it's a great idea. I mean, I'm an avid collector of stuff, which I'm trying to slow down on as I get older, more about the experience of things. But for me, it's out of my range. I'm out of my value. Let me put it that way too. My thing is, I don't care what KISS fans spend their money on. All right. If they want to buy a $12,500 sword, I think that's great. But for me, it doesn't have that value. I mean, it might be have a $5,000 value on it. I don't know. I haven't really put that much thought into it. But the point being, I don't have a problem with KISS wanting to sell everything they got. Okay.
Yeah, the last show is maybe an auction. They play Rock and Roll All Night. Good night. So long. Thanks for everything. Then an auctioneer comes out and goes, "Hey, you want the snare drum?" Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm surprised that they haven't auctioned off the ability to go up there and say, you know, "You wanted the best, you got the best. Hottest band in the world, KISS." I mean, they could auction that off for every show and probably make 10 grand a show. I don't know. I can't believe they hadn't thought of that. Anyway, so whatever. We'll get into Eddie Trunk a little bit later too, but, you know, Paul's got a guitar experience that's 21.5, I think. It may be more than that. If you want the guitar, the guitar strap, and him sign it and all that kind of stuff, it's like 21.5. To me, that's out of the range of 99% of all KISS fans.
Right.
I guess from the economics of it, maybe they don't want to do as many of these as they've done in the past. So the point being, they've put it at a price range which you're either going to have 0 to 1 participants per show. So,
or maybe not even that. Maybe just 0-1 a week, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting how they sat down and thought through these pricing points. But it's obviously that they priced them to slow down the activity of that. I mean, Paul would rather sell one at $21,500 than 4, 5, or 6 of them at $4,000 or $5,000. I mean, I'm assuming. I would love to sit down with and understand the economics of this meeting when Paul put this together and when Gene put all his together and that kind of thing. It's just interesting. I think it's more interesting than anything to me. I don't get angry about it or anything like that. Like a lot of KISS fans are like, "Wow, this really says something about the band." Well, it kind of does. They've always been capitalist, and the idea of KISS was the fact that they realized in 1976 that, hey, we got something more here than a band that plays music. We actually created something that we can market, and people are paying for it. And as long as people continue to pay for it, they're going to continue to do it. So people, why do you care what I spend my money on or any other KISS fan spends their money on? Because right. I'm sure if we looked into your personal life, there's something that we would probably go, "That's stupid. Why did you buy that $100,000 car. Why did you buy that? Whatever, right?
Or yeah, or any of that stuff. But look, I mean, part of it too is the exclusiveness of it, right? I mean, the vault was $2,000.
Yep.
And it didn't allow everybody to go, but it wasn't an event for everybody, right? If you want the event for everybody is the concert.
Yeah.
That's for everybody. Then there's other price points where you can get in if you want. I mean, look, I can go to the Falcons game or you go to the Titans game and get in for, I mean, there's games, you know, and you see tickets or you got buddies that have tickets. I'll give you $20 or whatever.
Yeah.
And you can go in and sit sort of in the upper level or, you know, far away from the field, but you've got a seat. You can see the game. You can take in the experience. You can get the hot dog and then the beer and the Coke or whatever. You can see the scoreboard and you can hear the, you know, the hit and all that stuff. All right. Well, if you want to sit right next to the sideline to where you can have interaction with the players as they're standing there on the field, that's going to cost you a little more money. Right. And Kiss does the same thing. Everybody does the same thing. I mean, Fleetwood Mac isn't just going to let everybody come backstage and hang out.
Right.
You know, I mean, they don't want everybody backstage hanging out. They want only, if they're going to have people backstage, we only want to have certain people backstage.
Right.
And the only way to determine who comes back is how much are you willing to pay to hang out with, you know, Mick Fleetwood.
Right. And I want to back up to what I said a few minutes ago. I am collecting less Kiss stuff. I'm very minimal. And I think that the bulk of the people that were buying Kiss merchandise are in my age group. We had the means to buy stuff during a certain point of our life and can, if we want to, continue to do that. But we're not. We recognize the fact that we have a lot of Kiss crap. And I'm thinning mine out a little bit even. So I've said this before, that it's more about, I'm about to turn 53 next month. At my age, it's more about the experience than it is the material item. So if I'm willing to pay for the experience of an expensive Kiss ticket, be it a front row ticket, I think they're have averaged probably out $1,000 on this tour, not cheap, then okay, that's my experience. I buy the expensive ticket. Or if I want to add to that, I'll do the meet and greet. So I can spend up to, I can buy, have a the lowest meet and greet, a couple $1,000s, to the most expensive meet and greet, $7,500, to the next level of, all right, I am interested in a material item with an experience. I can spend $21,000 with Paul Stanley. So I think Kiss recognizes the fact that their merchandise sales is definitely waning. The number of items that are coming out now is minimal compared to what it was during the farewell tour.
Right.
Because
where they would put their name on anything. And that's anything. Also a little backlash because there was a lot of junk.
There was, yes.
Right.
It's been labeled as Spencer's crap. I mean, and I have a lot of that crap, to be quite honest with you. I was somewhat selective during that time. But, yes, I agree with you, Tuck. A bunch of it was crap, and a lot of it has held zero value.
Right. I mean, nothing's going to be the pinball machine, right? Or the magic
Magic Market Cups are a good one.
Cups or, I mean, those things have in the Kiss, the original Kiss cards, you know, the Donruss Kiss cards from the 70s. I mean, there's certain things that I think people our age value.
Right.
Right. We don't necessarily, as cool as the Todd McFarlane figures were, do they really
zero value?
You have to have them or not have them?
There are so many of them now. You can buy them for $5 a piece. So people are selling open cases of them for $20. I mean, some of that stuff is in such mass quantities that it has zero value. People have so many of them that they bought up, they don't know what to do with them. And I mean,
it's like, you know, a lot of us our age have the Star Wars figures, right? And there's millions of, but really the only ones that matter are the ones that came out in the 70s and early 80s.
Right.
who cares about any of this other stuff that's been mass produced that really has no. Now, if I were 20, you know, maybe those things do have some sentimental value, but they just have none to me.
Right.
Talking about the newer stuff.
Yeah. And there's some of that stuff. I mean, there's some stuff that I bought during the era. Let's use the Kiss Bears. All right. Kind of a weird item, right? A grown man buys bears that are dressed up like Kiss. All right.
Wait, let's not all grown men did that, but okay.
Okay, so I did, and and out of my stuff, as I filter it down and reduce it, one of the items that I will keep forever are the Kiss Bears dressed like Dynasty, the Dynasty costumes, because the Dynasty show was the first concert I got to see in 79 in Atlanta. It has very special meaning to me for that reason. The fact that my mom took me, my mom's been gone for many years. She died 6 years after that. So a whole lot of meaning for that Kiss show. So when I see the Kiss Dynasty costumes, and I just recently bought the new action figure, 8-inch size Dynasty, because that era, those costumes mean so much to me. I love that era. So there is sentimental value to some of that stuff, where I have the other set of bears that are dressed in the 78 costumes that don't mean that much to me. I'll probably wind up letting those go at some point.
Right. And that's a very individualized reason. Yeah. Whereas me, I couldn't care less about any of the bears.
I agreed. I mean, if you look at them and you go, yeah, that was kind of weird. The bears have, you know, if we talk about holding value, they have increased in value, and they're kind of a hot item. So for whatever reason, it hit a tone with people on those bears. So that was a good purchase for that reason. Now, the 5 ashtrays from Psycho Circus and the Reunion era that I have haven't held any value. So, you know, if you know anybody that smokes and wants Kiss ashtrays, you can email them. Anyway,
go to the Kiss Talk eBay page.
I should probably do that.
And hey, you know what? You can buy the ashtrays for $20. For $40, you can come and get them, and we'll sign them.
And for $50, you can sit here in the Kiss Talk studio and record right here with me.
And smoke a cigarette. And then for $140,
no smoking in the Kiss Talk studio.
$250, you can take us to Outback. And we'll give you the ashtrays, you'll sign them, and you can buy us dinner.
And we'll give you a Kiss Talk sticker.
Yeah.
So anyway, good conversation, good start. We're going to try to keep these to a certain length so that you have an opportunity to listen to them in pieces. So I've told Tuck I want to try to keep these to an hour, so we're going to try to do that. So basically In our debut in 2019, we hit up the Kiss Cruise, and we talked about the rollout of the End of the World Tour and what they're doing to this point. And we have covered all the items on my topic list of those two subjects. Tuck, do you have anything you want to add about the Kiss Cruise or the Kiss End of the World rollout?
I'll add about the Kiss Talk event that we've just went through here. We've just scratched the surface. There's so much more going on.
I've got 2 pages of topics that that I want to hit on. So
in about a month, we've got an event happening in Nashville. It was supposed to be in Memphis. Who knows what's going to happen there? That's kind of like a jack in the box. You don't know what's going to pop out.
That's right. And we're going to I actually thought that we'd get that far on this episode, and we love to talk about Kiss, so that didn't happen. So we got plenty of stuff to talk about.
And then there's, you know, is the vault going to be commercially available?
Right, and it is. And
that's coming up.
It's on page 2. So
stay tuned, because we've got a lot of opinions about that stuff, and there's a lot of things going on that maybe you're not aware of that we'll be talking about coming up.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. So, again, we are a fan of all the other podcasts out there. So we want you not just listen to us, but we want you to listen to the Kiss Room Podcast Rock City. Kiss FAQ. I'm sure I'm leaving something out.
I'm trying to think. As the ones you've said.
Yeah, what am I leaving out?
There's a million of them, but there's some really good ones.
Three sides of the coin. I'm a fan of them as well. And I'd intended on covering some of the great episodes over the past 3 months that have come out of all those shows. I'll get to those next time. But in any case, we thank you for listening to us, giving us an opportunity to be part of your KISS podcast family. And there's going to be some exciting things, obviously, with the tour starting this year. My understanding is that the Indie Expo is they're going to be able to slide that one in between legs of the tour. So Keith is working on that, and I would assume that announcement would come out fairly soon. The KISS Cruise 9 announcements will be coming out soon, and we'll see kind of where that's headed. So, man, again, great time to be a KISS fan. There's always a lot to talk about, and we're going to keep talking about it because that's what we do. We are KISS Talk. Tuck, I thank you for being here and joining me with this venture. So this is exciting.
No better place to be. We're recording this on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'd be upstairs watching, you know,
Battlestar Galactica
or something, but.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. And please go to the Facebook page, give us a like, go to iTunes, give us a review, lock us in, subscribe to us so that we're in your list of KISS podcasts to check out. See you next time. Thanks, Tuck.
See you, man.
KISS Talk is an Into Rock podcast production.